We're going to be looking at 2 Kings today. A dive in the, you know, I was trying the greatest commandment, but then just where my brain has been the last couple of days, I think I needed something about not giving up and persevering. So we're going to be looking here at 2 Kings 5. And hey, listen, everything is about the greatest commandment, if you think about it that way. So 2 Kings chapter 5. We're going to look at the commander, the child, the coward, and the cure. We'll start reading from verse 1. Now Naaman was a commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. So we're introduced to this character very early on, Naaman. He is the commander, a man that seemingly had it all together. He was successful, he was accomplished, he was given high position, praise, and power. He had he had what people spend their entire life looking for. He had access to anything in the kingdom. He was set, but he also had leprosy, a debilitating skin condition that slowly disfigured the person who had it, and it eventually set them into isolation for fear of contamination for the rest of their lives. Think back to like January of 2020, where if someone sneezed on a train, you would say, God bless you. January 2020. If someone sneezed on a train in April of 2020, hey, you gotta get out of here. You can't be here. But now imagine the sense of you can't be here, but just for the rest of your life. Like that same feeling that we had when we saw someone cough or sneeze, that kind of like, oh, like I even if I love you, I can't be in proximity to you. Like that was the destiny of anyone that had leprosy. It was for the rest of your life, you had to live in this space of people can't come close to you. So your relationships, gone. Your family, gone. So all this good stuff that he had going for him, at some point, he knew this is going to become obvious at some point, and I'm going to have to remove myself from everything. So even though on the outside, it seemed like he had everything that anybody would want, there was something inside coming out as well that was going to destroy all of that. I think sometimes we can look at celebrities and athletes, especially in the era of social media, and think, wow, what a life. I want what they have. Why can't I have that stuff? I mean, I think nothing will make you realize how much and how little you have, like moving. And like, so we're unpacking boxes and I'm like, man, like it would have been so nice if we had a fill in the blank. Or it's just like, it's so easy for us to get so caught up in what our life consists of that we forget everything else. And I think especially with when we're looking at these celebrities, I mean, the Olympics are on right now. So it's a lot of like, look at how great they have it. Why can't I have what that person has? Why can't God bless me like he blesses them? And that must have been what a lot of people thought about Naaman. Like, why can't I have that position? Why can't I have that success? Why can't God bless me like God is blessing him? All the while not knowing the pain and fear that Naaman had to live with every single day. We should thank God for what he has given us. We should also thank God for what he has kept from us as well. But it's not just, God, thank you that I have this. I think sometimes we have opportunities that we wanted that didn't work out. We got to thank God for that as well. Because you never know. A study recently showed that over 60% of current Billboard topping musicians are currently getting counseling for a level of depression that reduces their ability to enjoy the quality of their life. That means more than half of the successful musicians that we listen to feel like they cannot enjoy their success because of the depression they're feeling. The divorce rate is higher in celebrity couples than non-celebrity couples. The suicide rate is higher in celebrities than non-celebrities. The rate of debilitating anxiety is higher among social media influencers than casual users of the same platforms. Like the people that seem to have it all together are where the majority of the suffering is coming from. Naaman had it all, but not what he needed. Maybe today you are here and currently living a life that should be fulfilling. You have the job, you have the relationship, you have the house, you have the stuff, you've been successful, and people want to be you. But if they knew your pain, if they knew the loneliness you feel even in the crowd, if they knew the concern and anxiety you carried all the time, they would not switch your lives ever if they knew what was going on. Naaman was about to come into a realization that I pray that you come into as well, that there's nothing on this earth that comes close to the cleansing that our God in heaven offers us in our lives. Even when everything else seems right, what God offers is the most correct thing you can ever take. Now, if you're sitting here today thinking that life would be better if you had this and that, remember that the grass is always greener where you water it and where you put the effort in making sure that it's taken care of. And it's very easy to point. It takes a lot of energy to compare your life to other people's lives. It takes a lot of happiness away to look at all the stuff you don't have and what other people do have. So maybe, here's a suggestion, take that energy and focus and effort and just put it into making the best out of what you have, and then your grass all of a sudden looks a lot nicer. So wherever we fall in the I have a lot but I feel empty, or I feel like I just need more, whatever that is, the solution is always going to be a God focus that helps us not just be comfortable in where we are, but be confident that God has us where we're supposed to be. Let's keep reading in verse 2. Now bands of raiders from Aram had gone out and taken captive of a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." Okay. This is the point in the story that's kind of the transition of, okay, we have Naaman, and how did he come in contact with the person that was going to help him? This is the child in the story. This young girl was captured and enslaved. This girl also had her lineage, which traced back to Abraham. She would have been told of all the wonders that God has done for her ancestors in the past, all the many miracles and blessings and reward that God had in store for them. And rather than living in the realization of those blessings, she had been captured and forced to work for the wife of the military commander that defeated and enslaved her people, her family. And now that same commander has a disease that will inevitably ruin his life. And this girl does not embrace vengeance. She does not embrace bitterness. She does not embrace anger. But rather, she seeks to bring peace and healing into this life through bringing him to God. And it's just one part of the story, getting from one to the next. But look at this girl's faith amid direct and unfair oppression. And it's deeply convicting, where it's so easy sometimes for me to use hardship as a license to distance myself from personal righteousness, and then completely distance myself from care and concern for other people's hurts. But here we have an example of someone sharing their conviction in the middle of commotion. This is the God that we have access to today, a God that is still real and still full of power, even when things in my life seem broken. And it would have been, again, so easy for this girl living under oppression to just say, like, you know what? This is your fault. You brought this on yourself. Maybe if you had left my people alone, God would have taken care of you in the first place. But rather than that, she sees someone suffering, even though that person caused suffering to her life. She sees their suffering and says, I know what will make you better. If you could just come in contact with someone that knows my God, it has the potential to clear all your problems, even though you are causing problems in my life today. That's the child in the story. Verse 4, Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl had said. "By all means, go," the king of Aram replied. "I'll send a letter to the king of Israel." So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took from the king of Israel said, "With this letter, I'm sending my servant Naaman to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy." As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, "Am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he's trying to pick a quarrel with me." This guy, this is the coward. This is the king of God's people. This is the king of Israel. This is the one that's supposed to be the representative and spiritual leader of the Israelites. And just to explain his position a little bit, things are constantly tense in during this time of the history of the Jewish people, where people were so hungry for land and expansion that they would use any excuse as something to conquer and take more land. So any sight or the thought of disrespect or hint of aggression, and it's okay, well now it's war, and whatever we conquer we're going to take. So the king's fear was, well, this guy clearly wants to fight, because the only reason he would send someone here with an incurable disease and ask me to fix it is if he's looking for a spark to start a war that ends my time as king. So his concern was, you're sending me an impossible situation because you know that I can't do it, and that's going to lead to us fighting, and you have a bigger army than me. So this is the beginning of my submission of power. But he was supposed to be the strength of God's people. He was supposed to be the stability of God's people. And here he is, completely faithless. If there is anyone on earth that should be able to stay calm in the presence of potentially challenging news, it should be God's people. If there is anyone on earth that should be able to see the potential for God to pull a miracle out of a monster situation, it should be God's people. And I don't want to vilify anyone who has reacted concerned or worried at the point of trouble. But if there's anyone on earth that should be able to bounce back in full trust that God is bigger than whatever problem that we've been knocked down by, it should be God's people. Why is this? Because we're told to cast all our anxiety on God because he cares. We're told to not be afraid or disheartened because I am your God. We're told to not to be anxious about anything. And then we're told that nothing is impossible with God. So if there's anyone that should be able to hear troubling news like this and not immediately panic and go and say, well, this must be the end, it should be God's people. Maybe you have received some concerning news this week or month or this year. Maybe it's been a series of challenges and you feel like you can't catch a break. And even after you're trying to recover from one, another one happens. Take heart in this. You are loved by the King and the Creator of the universe. So don't panic. Pray. And the king here is a terrible example of this. This is where we look at how we should not behave. Where the child in, previously, that's how we should react. This king, the leader, the one that should have it all together, is our example of how not to react. Verse 8, when Elisha, the man of God, heard the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent this message. "Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there's a prophet in Israel." So Naaman went to his house and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elijah sent a message to him, "Go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed." But Naaman went away angry and said, "I thought he would have surely come out to me and stand and call upon the name of the Lord and wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleaned?" So he turned and went away in his rage. You know, I feel for my boy Naaman here a little bit. So we don't know the exact route that he took, but because some of the topography has changed since the time of his journey and now, But the trip through Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan on the way to Israel would have been about 1,000 miles. That's leaving here and going west towards Pennsylvania, through Ohio, through India, through Illinois, and then landing in Iowa. That's the route that he would have taken. And it's not highways. This is like very challenging terrain. He made the long and difficult and dangerous journey and was hoping to at least see the person. At least, I just wanted, like, can I just see the guy who apparently can fix me? But no, he gets the messenger. And the messenger is asking him to do something that he thinks is beneath him. And he's, and at this point, he's ready to walk away. You know, what I find pretty funny that that sometimes people that like to brag about how real and authentic they are also the ones that when you are real and authentic with, not have an issue with everything you're saying. Naaman did not like what he was being told. And if you remember prior to this, he's like, hey, I have this plan, I have this vision, I'm gonna go and get myself fixed. And then he's given the cure. I don't like that. I don't like the realness and authenticity that I'm receiving. But I think, you know, I think we have to ask ourselves sometimes, right? Like when you have a plan or a dream or a vision, and this is like, I think God is behind this, and then just something goes wrong with that. I mean, we can point to Naaman being angry, but I've been that guy for non-spiritual things. When Hannah and I one time we filed our taxes the first year we got married, and we got a return, and I was like, oh, I know that's how I didn't know I could get money back from this. This is great. So we actually went on a little trip with the tax money, and then the next year came around, we planned a trip based on, hey, it happened last year, nothing's changed, so let's go, let's make it happen again. And I'll never forget, after we sat with our tax lady, and she said a number, and I was like, huh, that number is different from last year, but that's fine, I'll take it. And then she said, how would you like to pay that? I was like, what do you mean pay? That's not how that works. You tell me how much I get, and then you cut me a check. It's like, no, actually, you owe this amount. And like, it, I came with a plan. This interaction is gonna do this for me. And then what happened was something wildly different, and it was incredibly frustrating. You know, God can still be God and not do things exactly how we want him to. Even if they're good, solid, spiritual things. Even if it's like, of course God would want, actually, he doesn't have to do anything. But one of the biggest mistakes I've seen in myself and I've seen other people make is failing to see that God's way is always the best way. And sometimes that means you have to wait. Sometimes that means you have to adjust. Sometimes that means you have to replace. But in every single situation, in all things, God works for the good of those who love him. So even if what you want, God, even if, God, I just want my child to fall in love with you. God, I just want my children to commit their, God, shouldn't you want that? Like, that sounds like something that I should be, like, this is a good thing. I'm not asking for money or a bigger house, or I just want my kids to love you. If that doesn't happen in your plan and how you want it to be, it doesn't change anything about God. It doesn't reduce his power or ability or love for you or desire for your child to love him back. It doesn't change any of that. But it's hard to live in that space. So Naaman, how could you be so angry? I mean, he had a plan too. And it wasn't what he thought it was going to be. Verse 13 here. Naaman's servants went to him and said, my father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you to wash and be cleansed? So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored and it became clean like that of a young boy. Naaman was given a plan, which he didn't like at first, But he stuck through with it, and the outcome was by definition life-changing for him and his family and his legacy. Imagine the tragedy that it would have been if after everything Naaman went to, he dipped himself in the river 6 times and then gave up. It's not working. I don't see any changes. I'm embarrassed by what I'm being told to do right now. I'm just going to go back and do things how I've been doing it on my own. I don't think this is working. I'm done. Forget it. That is a tragedy. But I do not think it's a stretch to say that many people have been around the corner from amazing breakthrough in their lives and have given up because the progress wasn't as obvious as they wanted it to be. So please, do not give up. Do not give up on your marriage. Do not give up on your kids. Do not give up on your repentance. Do not give up on your spiritual maturity. Do not give up on God's church. Yes, yes, we are a mess. This church is a mess, but we have a Messiah which covers all of our mess. Do not give up. You might very well be on your 6th dip in the Jordan right now. This could be your dip 6, but do not give up. And in your not giving up, make sure you're also following God's instruction. That makes a difference. That makes a huge difference. You can't have a godly outcome without a godly process. So if you're just impatiently frustrated, like begrudgingly hanging in there, you don't actually get to see like the benefits that happens when you have faith through a situation. So dip 6 into the future has to happen with faith and fulfillment in who God is, period. Because God has proven himself worthy of that trust. You know, I went to watch the Nets play at Barclays years ago, and I got there early because the Nets were playing the Bucks, and Giannis Antetokounmpo is this, you know, he's a Nigerian basketball player that happens to play for the Greek national team. But Nigerians, Nigerians in the room, we just know, thank you, we just know, like, I don't care what your passport says, you're Nigerian. So my plan was to get to the game early, and I had a Nigerian soccer jersey on, and we were going to become best friends. That was my plan. So I get there like an hour early to try and catch the team warm-ups. He didn't even show up. So he came later, but I missed him there. There was a guy, though, that also came early that saw me wearing the jersey, commented on the jersey, and I was like, hey, listen, like, this is a knockoff. My aunt brings knockoffs to the country every couple of months. I can get you one if you want. And he's like, wow, you know, thank you. Let me repay you by getting you and my brother-in-law was there. You and David Sassone. We're gonna go get. I'll take you guys to get something to eat in the stadium. And I was like, hot dogs and a Coke. Sure, we'll go. As we're walking, all of the staff is greeting him. Hi, Mr. Williams. Hi, Mr. Williams. Good evening, Mr. Williams. It's like, who is this guy? That everyone is they're stopping their conversation to make sure they acknowledge him. So come to find out, he's been like a season ticket holder for like 35, 40 years. He's practically part of the organization. And it wasn't hot dogs and a Coke. He took us to this like buffet that they have in the stadium, and hey, just stay as long as you want. And when you come back, like, I don't have the power to get you into the Barclays, but just buy a cheap ticket. Buy the cheapest ticket available, and then come to my suite, and I'll put you somewhere else. So, sure, no problem. So I try that within a couple of weeks, obviously. I was like, hey, Mr. Williams, I'm here. I don't know if you remember me. Let's go Knicks. Where are you? Come down to my suite. So I come. I can touch the ceiling of my initial spot, and then I come down, and he walks. He guides me through security, and they're all, "Hey, Mr. Williams," and they don't even look at me. I'm just walk in with him. And actually, at this time, it's myself. I actually have Hannah and our two sons there with me as well. So he takes the four of us and puts us almost level with the court. Like, okay, yeah, hey, enjoy the game. I'm going to go back up to my section. But if there's anything else I can do, let me know. And I was like, and so he was pestering at this point. Like, you guys want anything? You want whatever? You know what? Maybe some water for my kids? No problem. So then he leaves. And he doesn't come back for like another quarter. You know what never crossed my mind while he was gone? I don't think he's able to get me this water. I don't think he has the resources to provide what he said he's going to provide and getting me the water. I don't think he has the power to bring water to my family. That never crossed my mind. I don't care. I can wait until the game is over. I'm not, like, I don't doubt ever that he can bring me this water because he got me these seats. He put my family through, like, I cannot afford to watch basketball at that level. And he put all of us through, got us to see. I have used this connection for 5 more games. He has proven that he could do so much more. So if I have to wait for a bottle of water, I'm not going to be frustrated. I'm not going to doubt his power to do it. I'm not going to start talking crazy about how, like, oh, where's Mr. William now? Like, I don't question that ever. Think about what God has done in your life already. Just think about that situation that you thought there's no getting out of this. This is not gonna. When was that? Because it happened, and now you're here. So God has already done. And if that means we have to wait for something now, let's wait. In full assurance that he has what we're asking for, or better than what we're asking for. Verse 15, then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, now I know that there's no God in all the world except in Israel. So please accept a gift from your servant. The prophet answered, as surely as the Lord lives, whom I serve, I will not accept a thing. And even after Naaman urged him, he refused. Why did Elisha say no? There's a couple of reasons that come to mind. There's the potential issue of these were not God's people. You can't kind of have to work through that dynamic. But I think the biggest one that we must factor in is simply, Elisha did not heal Naaman. It wasn't the water that healed Naaman. It wasn't the journey that healed Naaman. It was God reacting to Naaman's obedience that healed Naaman. The cure is always obedience. It might not be what you want, but the cure is always obedience. It might be outside of your comfort zone, but the cure is always obedience. And God, so full of mercy and grace, gives us his son, knowing full well that we're going to fall short in our obedience. But the cure has always been just do what God says. We have a PhD in trying to figure out our own ways to fix things, and we're still failing. Just do what God says. As we close today, looking at the commander, the child, the coward, and the cure, let's take to heart that God wants us to be cleansed. However you came in here today, nothing is beyond God's ability to make us new. He's already done his part and will continue to do his part. The question becomes, will we do ours? Will you obey? My prayer is that all of us will and live lives cleansed from the burden and disease of sin and all living in God's grace. Love you guys. Thanks for letting me share today.